Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. With every kernel, every grain, every seed, ADM sees possibilities to improve everyday life. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's September the 13th, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with all the day's agricultural news, including an item on mad cow from USFDA. It's taking a look back at the cost of containing the disease, and word from Wisconsin that could lay out a roadmap for next year's farm bill debate. Of course, we'll talk with Drew Lerner, too. He's of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. That happens just after the bottom of the hour. And along the way, I'll update you with a bit of research news on ethanol and food from the U of I. It all happens on this Wednesday edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The SEP wheat at 381.5, down 7.25 today. December futures there at 397.5 for the soft red winter wheat. They were off a nickel. September corn futures 224, up a half. December futures unchanged at 237.75 in the corn pit. And the March contract at 252.25, down a quarter. December next year, up a half cent at $2.85 a bushel. September soybeans, $5.30. They were up 2.75. November's at 5.40.5, up 2 cents. January, 2 cents higher at 5.54. And next year's November at 6.01.25, up 2 cents. Bean meal futures September contract at 157.50, 140 higher for the day. September bean oil off, up 26 at 24.47. Now come the negative numbers from the Mercantile Exchange, 117.85. The September feeder cattle finished $1.25 lower. October live cattle at $90.32.5, down $1.77.5, and December futures in that pit at $90.45, down $1.42.5. Lean hog futures October contract 65.92.5. They were off $1.57.5 for the day. The outside markets, taking a quick look as the numbers load, actually. Well, I guess I'm not going to get those numbers to load, so we won't go through those outside markets at this point. We'll go straight to Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd.
And let's talk about the marketplace just a bit. First, I know you were interested to watch yesterday's USDA reports. What was your assessment as they came out?
You know, my first knee-jerk and even reevaluating it is they probably have the bean crop trend right. They have the size probably right. It is a big crop, and it's the largest increase in growth in any August to September report since they've been making changes. I think the verdict is still out in the corn. We think that when we talk to our friends in the grain trade and when we go and start our calling process around the Midwest, we think the verdict is still out if they got the direction even right. So I'd say I'm going to give them a D-plus on the grade card there. And I think they've got Illinois going the wrong direction. I think they've got Iowa going the wrong direction. We do know that the along the Illinois and River area, it's a very good crop, but the kernel depth size, test weight, some yield problems, and history always tells me that you have to have a good crop from Cairo to Rockford and from Jacksonville to Danville, and we think there's some bumps in the road to get that big crop. We don't think it will, and the trouble is history says that 5 out of 10 years, the next one historically gets larger.
This tells me that despite what USDA is talking about, you're looking for a better fall in terms of prices rather than one that continues to trend lower.
Well, it there is some very unusual things out, you know, in the future of the commodity business. And one of the things that with this drop in energy prices, you know, the stock market's going up, and that's historically good news for the typical American that, you know, has a 401k. The second one is that energy stocks stabilized today and are trading higher, and the crude oil price is stabilized. One ultimate weapon, if prices in the crude oil market do get too cheap, of course, the Arab OPEC countries have a tendency to use a threat called reducing oil flow, and it seems like that the oil prices are substantially down, and gee whiz, it's wonderful to fill your tank up with cheaper energy. That's good for the economy, good for the public, and not spend so much money in fuel.
In fact, when we look at that, but it's $64.10 in the October contract for the trade now. They're up 34 cents for the crude oil. When you look at that price, really the high is up at $75 or thereabouts, if I remember correctly. But it wasn't all that long ago. We were trading $40. I don't know. What do you call cheap crude prices today? Is it $50, $55, $58? What's a cheap crude price?
It's one of those questions that you a politician should never answer, but if we're going on from that. But anyway, it's definitely, you know, the $3 a gallon I thought was horrible to the economy, and gee whiz, we all would like to have it closer to $2 a gallon when it's all said and done.
Yeah, how about me asking, let me ask it that way then, because you mentioned the $2 level, and we'd prefer to have it at the $2 a gallon level. What happens with ethanol? Is the safety net there now with just the mandate at the 7.5 billion gallons and you don't have to worry about it? What happens with ethanol and the producers at that point? And how much really do we need to have the cost of a barrel of crude oil to make it an efficient economic investment?
You know, from all of, from every source that I talk to, I think the optimism about the bioenergy expenditures are still on track for everybody. And, you know, I'm going to say that, you know, this is the good news, bad news situation. If we would see oil prices to go back to $50 a barrel, there would be major problems called a major recession or major economic problems in the United States or around the world that would cause a major sell-off in energy prices, I think, that low. So the bad news is it wouldn't be very good for the Dow if prices were that low, in my opinion. And, you know, something in this stabilizing area where people can predict their well-being is the better factor. You know, one thing that we are of the opinion of with this lower energy prices, you know, hopefully it will improve transportation. Mm-hmm. It will also improve maybe our fertilizer prices. And when we continue to talk around the state, you know, we do get the general feeling is that there has been tremendous grain storage built. And people are very optimistic, you know, from Sioux City to Indianapolis to Cairo to Central Illinois here about better times ahead as far as flat prices in corn and soybeans. And the main factor, of course, that everybody realizes is that there should be and could be some really good demand in the next 6 months to a year.
And finally, we talked about corn, and I know you're feeling good about that and what USDA had to say you didn't feel so great about.
Yeah.
But what about the soybeans? Did they get it right?
Well, you know, when we talk, and our own observations are the soybean pod counts are good and the weather seems to be fairly good. The big thing is that around the world, the soybean crush margins are good to excellent. The Brazilians are having a tremendous economic crunch because these $5 and 40 cent beans, you know, they're probably losing 60, 70 cents a bushel on some of their fixed costs. It probably will reduce. We understand, we saw a paper today, probably 7% reduction in plantings in Brazil. Biodiesel is really big guns in Europe and big guns in the U.S., and we think then the soybean demand for feed usage in the Pacific Rim is tremendous. Our general impression is that the real improvement in the acreage demand will probably take place later next year. I heard Daryl Good mention that. We've heard, I saw something written by Doug Jackson today that indicated, and I would go along that, you know, probably with reduced acres in the world, better demand, better price relationships with a little less beans planted next year, a little more corn, that we will see better prices. And that's also very encouraging to a soybean farmer that would take a large LDP and possibly see 50 to 75 cents a bushel price rally. You know, what a way to celebrate the 4th of July with that kind of a situation.
And finally, coming back to this fall, any movement at all in your area, or how soon might the combines roll?
You know, we are hearing three things, or four things here. The stock quality is not very good.
Mm-hmm.
We're also seeing wet soils that scare us to death. And the crop seems to be mature. And we're also getting the vibe that the farmer is going to be very aggressive at filling his drying bins with wetter corn. We're also getting the feeling that the farmer is going to push the combine a little quicker than historically. I'm a little puzzled at that, but they're going to push it and try to get more corn harvested a little quicker, a little even with higher moisture levels.
Is it really? I mean, are the hybrids just going down that bad that these guys want to get out there that fast?
Well,
surely
that's
not.
That's a reason. We're starting to see certain stock quality, you know, the tops blow out of the corn. And it looks a lot like late October to early November to Paul Cooley, and I'm hearing that from other people. And, of course, the other factor is, Todd, if you have a good crop in some of those good areas, why not put it away, dry it, and take advantage of it, because they do have a big crop to roll over. So it's personal choice and that type of thing. I would probably wait if I was sitting in the combine seat, but I'm sitting in a commodity office, and everybody has a little different opinion on that one.
You bet. I'm with you. I'll talk with Emerson Nafziger and see what he has to say about the corn crop in the state, and we'll try to get that on maybe later this week. Thanks, Paul, for being with us.
Have a profitable day.
Mm-hmm. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens on Wednesday afternoons.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at lincolandagrienergy.com.
At the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Drew Lunar of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City will join us for a look at the agricultural weather. AM 580 Ed Kieser forecast for tonight in western Illinois. Gradual clearing, some partly patchy fog that is developing. In eastern Illinois, mostly cloudy, patchy fog forming there as well. In Indiana, cloudy, scattered light showers, some patches of drizzle. Lows this evening, a cool 47 in northwestern Illinois to 57 in southeastern Indiana. Tomorrow in Illinois, patchy fog early, otherwise partly to mostly sunny. In Indiana, mostly cloudy, a few isolated showers early, and then becoming partly sunny during the afternoon. Highs will range from 73 in northeastern Indiana and near Lake Michigan to around 80 in southwestern Illinois. Dave Dickey is here now with a complete look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, the director of the Food and Drug Administration's Center for Veterinary Medicine says the FDA may have underestimated costs associated with limiting the spread of mad cow disease. Steve Sunloff says the FDA is now going back over its proposal that would force renderers to remove brains and spinal cords from all dead stock cattle processed for livestock feed. The FDA says only a few companies would be willing to separate out those specified risk materials. Wisconsin Representative Ron Kind today unveiled his Healthy Farms, Foods, and Fuels Act. a bill that some say could be a roadmap for next year's Farm Bill debate on non-subsidy issues. The bill uses the Conservation Reserve Program as a tool to restore floodplains and wetlands. It would double the size of the Wetlands Reserve Program, and it would remove caps on CRP payments. The bill also expands support of farmers markets. Witnesses testifying at a Senate subcommittee hearing say NAFTA has been good for U.S. agriculture, but some hurdles remain. Iowa Farm Bureau President Craig Lang says NAFTA has been a plus.
Thanks to NAFTA, Canada and Mexico now buy a third of U.S. agriculture exports and also supply a third of our ag imports. Japan used to be our top export market for the American farm products, but now Canada is number one and Mexico is number two.
U.S. Trade Representative John Melly told lawmakers tariffs on U.S. corn, dried beans, milk powder, and sugar going into Mexico will terminate at the end of 2008, giving some Mexican producers pause.
There's been some concern expressed in Mexico over the elimination of the duties on corn and beans. The Mexican government, the Fox administration, has committed to implementing those obligations. Obviously, those are very large exports from a large number of states in the United States.
Witnesses also testified that NAFTA was especially good for U.S. beef exports. Beef producers in Australia are said to be worried about USDA plans to introduce grass-fed labeling for U.S. beef. Under the plan, beef from certain cattle that have spent time in feedlots and eaten grain could be labeled grass-fed. Nebraska Senator Ben Nelson says he'll attempt to attach $6.5 billion in agricultural drought relief to the pending port security bill. Nelson says drought relief is, in his words, a this-week issue. An industry-led trade mission to China indicates the PRC is an emerging corn market. Stan Baer of the Nebraska Corn Board was on the trip.
Even with a good crop, they're going to need U.S. corn because their standard living is increasing so rapidly.
Baer says that message was really driven home when ag attaché Kevin Lattner explained Chinese agriculture.
Kevin Lattner just pretty much showed us the statistics of how big a consumer China is and gave us a booklet of just exactly what their agriculture is about, their background and what they produce. Like they produce 50% of the vegetables and melons in the world in China and 48% of the pork. So they're a huge producer, but they're a huge consumer too.
Baer says China is likely to become a net importer of corn, and he predicted the U.S. will become the PRC's biggest supplier. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website for all the latest information from USDA and to sign up for our weekend newsletter. It's easy, just right there at the top of the page. Hit the words subscribe. It's at willag.org. Well, coming up, a little news from the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences here on the U of I campus. Biofuels in livestock. Research underway in the University of Illinois Department of Animal Sciences has developed methods for allowing the same field of corn to be used for production of livestock feed and ethanol. The process is important because of the growing demand for corn by the ethanol industry, a development that could reduce the amount of corn available for the livestock industry, which relies heavily upon the crop, says U of I researcher Larry Berger. His work is partially funded by ADM and looks at maximizing the food and fuel production per acre of corn. A field of corn, he says, does not have to be exclusively all for ethanol or all for livestock. Berger's been treating the stalk of the corn plant to increase its digestibility. If you combine that treated corn stalk with distiller's grain, that's the byproduct of the ethanol production, he says it creates a quality diet for livestock. The new feed product is being used in trials with beef and dairy cattle. Sustainable food for the world. While major strides have been made in feeding a rapidly growing world population, it is unacceptable to still have 800 million hungry people in the world. says a University of Illinois agricultural economist in a recent article in the Harvard International Review. The solution, says U of I Ag economist Gerald Nelson, requires everyone to think and act globally, finding ways to choose policies and programs that enhance agricultural productivity, maintaining environmental sustainability, and encouraging technology development while remaining vigilant about safety. Nelson's article, Sustainable Food for the World, Rethinking Policy, Technology, and the Environment, is based on his work for the Millennium Ecosystem Assessment. Nelson believes that the possibility exists for a world with many fewer hungry people and food production that is sustainable and more environmentally friendly. To achieve this future, governments, he says, must recognize the global consequences of agricultural policies and find ways to overcome the resistance of entrenched interest groups. The complete article can be read online. Just look for Gerald Nelson and Harvard in the Google search engine. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
It's a Wednesday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on WILL AM 580. Time now for our look at the cash grain markets with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain out of Terre Haute, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Kay.
Good afternoon to you, Todd.
Drowsy, a little gray, a little dreary here, a little bit of rainfall on and off. How about there in Terre Haute?
Well, we had varying amounts here. We had been rain-free for a long time, and we had anywhere from probably 1.5 inches to 3 inches in places, and over towards Indianapolis, they had about 4. So, and then south of here, I think there was some 6 and 7 and 8 inch totals down towards southern Illinois and Indiana. But, yeah, we finally got some rain. It's going to slow things down for a little bit, but some of these guys are about ready to get started into corn.
Yeah, they'll be started fairly shortly. I think a little earlier in your area maybe than around here. How close? Within the next few days maybe?
I would think so. Some of the sand corn is 18 to 20%, and I think they're going to get started in that. I really haven't heard a lot of yield reports. Down in the Evansville area, I hear anywhere from 80 to 200, but not enough around here, but next week by this time I should have some results for you.
We'll be looking forward to those results. How's the basis been holding up this week in light of yesterday's moves?
Well, believe it or not, that the board has not affected the basis all that much. It's just that farmer selling dried up, and as we talked, I think basis levels were driven to artificial levels via rail, and exports have been so good they've had to pay up. So train values have really gone up here a lot, about 15 cents in the last couple of weeks. But we're starting to see it level out and probably maybe deteriorate a little bit as we go into harvest.
And when you talk about those rail bids, that's to the southwest, and you're expecting them to deteriorate maybe into harvest by how much?
Well, it's in the southeast. And
southeast, yes.
Probably, well, between now, the train values today and for October, there's probably a 15-cent deterioration. Now, if for some reason we have a lot of weather problems and it slows down harvest, then the deceleration may not be as quickly as we think. But there's no doubt we'll be ratcheting the board and the basis probably down into harvest as we go along here.
And what are your bids for the day?
All right, our cash corn is 213, cash beans 508, and new crop wheat is 356.
We appreciate you being with us.
Thank you.
Kay Whitlock is with Terre Haute Grain out of Terre Haute, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Wednesday afternoon. In just about 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather with meteorologist Drew Lerner. Up next, your regional newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. The Danville School Board will have a new president next month. Current President David Groves is leaving the board October 2nd. A press release says he wants to explore other leadership options in the community. Groves has headed the school board since 2003 and has been a member since 2001. The board will have to name a replacement by October 28th. Current Vice President Pete Cranock will be the new president. The Democrat running for an open Illinois State Senate seat says he'll form a task force to advise him on economic development issues. It's the first of a 5-point plan that Mike Frerichs unveiled today. He also calls for expanded funding for higher education, particularly specific programs at Parkland College and Danville Area Community College. His GOP opponent, Judy Myers, claims that Frerichs' proposals would be undercut by Democratic Senate leaders. A new poll shows that 43% of Illinois voters consider themselves Democrats, 26% say they're Republicans. The 17 percentage point gap is the largest in the 16 years that WGN-TV and the Chicago Tribune have been conducting the pre-election poll. University of Illinois political science professor Chris Mooney says the poll numbers reflect both the state's historical Democratic leanings and a bigger nationwide trend. That poll surveyed 600 potential voters. 26% identified as independent, and about 5% didn't answer the question about party affiliation or named a different party. Some Indiana residents want the state to legalize video gambling in American Legion halls and other clubs. Supporters say the move would allow the state to regulate the machines and collect a piece of the pot. The Indiana Licensed Beverage Association has planned public meetings around the state to convince lawmakers they should legalize the devices when the General Assembly convenes in January. The meetings will include two in West Lafayette and Terre Haute. Authorities say what was thought to be a hostage situation at a bank in the Chicago suburb of Dalton has wrapped up without injury, but they say it isn't really clear what actually happened. Dalton Police Chief Elton McClendon says officers have been dealing with a hostage situation following a botched robbery, but when they entered the bank, all they found were two people hiding in a bathroom. Authorities say there's no sign of a gunman, no weapons have been found, and no arrests have been made. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us on this Wednesday afternoon for a look at the agricultural weather is Drew Lerner. He's the senior agricultural meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, I was looking at the forecast. Is it actually right that we have potentially a warm-up and a frost in the forecast within the next week?
Well, yeah, it does seem that way. I think we're probably going to get straightened out a little bit down the road here. There's a lot of changes taking place in the atmosphere. This is September, and it's that time of year that we see this kind of thing happen pretty often. But, yeah, we're going to see those temperatures soar up into the 70s and 80s across a big part of the Midwest as we go through the next few days, and then we'll turn right around and bring a fairly strong cold front across the region. Now, most of that frost that you're talking about is going to be pretty much limited to the northern plains, maybe a far northwestern slice of the Corn Belt, but we're talking about areas that normally see frosty conditions starting to occur at this time of the year, and crops are far enough advanced in that region that a soft frost event would certainly not hinder anything. It would actually help to drop some of the soybean leaves across parts of that region. So I think it's a pretty good scenario that's playing out here. The one thing we do want to worry a little bit about, and that's the precipitation. We've seen a lot of it here recently in the Western Corn Belt, and it looks like there's going to be, obviously, another round of precipitation coming on. This time it's going to be more significant in the Dakotas and Minnesota than it will be in Iowa, and that will at least give Iowa somewhat of a break. Iowa is still going to see some precipitation. And this entire frontal system and associated rainfall will eventually pass through the eastern Midwest as well. So we will see some interruption to field work still occurring across the region. The good news is the front's moving faster, and so the rainfall will be brief, and we'll probably see better drying conditions occur immediately after it.
And farmers will like to hear that, drying conditions, as they get ready to really gear up from harvest. Harvest delayed just a bit as wet weather has come across much of the Midwest.
I think conditions will get better. The 30-day outlook that we've just created here this morning is suggesting that the eastern portions of the Midwest will probably see a drier bias below average precipitation will occur across the eastern part of the Midwest for the September 15th through the October 15th period. This would be from Missouri, Illinois, and extreme southeastern Wisconsin eastward through Ohio and West Virginia and on over to the Atlantic coast. The wettest conditions over the next 30 days are going to be in the northern plains, maybe a portion of the west central plains, and in the Rocky Mountain region. Otherwise, it looks fairly decent that the delta will continue drier than usual, so they will be able to proceed with harvesting there. And it looks like our temperatures will have a cooler bias in the northern plains, but the rest of the Midwest will see temperatures fairly close to normal with a warmer bias beginning at the Ohio River and southward through the southeastern states.
A very short update on some of the other global regions that you've been watching closely with interest.
Well, we're still watching Australia. It looks like the situation there is not changing much. Australia is drier than usual. We've had some timely rains in the first 10 to 12 days of this month, and that precipitation actually improved some of the winter crops there temporarily. But the forecast now is for mostly dry conditions and warmer than usual weather for the next 10 days, and that will reverse the process and start stressing some of these winter crops. Once again, reproduction is right around the corner, so it is a big concern. Argentina is another area where there's a lack of moisture right now. We have a full week in front of us without any precipitation. Most of that country's crop region is too dry. Some of the wheat areas of Buenos Aires are okay, but the rest of the country is not doing well, and delays in early corn and sunseed planting are quite likely until better rains occur. And it looks like in the second week of the two-week forecast, we'll see a little bit of a ramp up on precipitation.
Thanks much, Drew.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too. Drew Lerner is the senior agricultural meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Chip Jorstad in Morris at 815-941-3706. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
And that is today's Closing Market Report. Remember, you can join us tomorrow morning at 8:40 for our first look at the markets. And don't forget to listen to today's futures analysis and cash grain analysis and weather on our website. Just go to willag.org. Have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.